and welcome to the PSC Photography Podcast. How about that, eh? We've done 19 shows as the Camera Creations Podcast, and now, through some jiggery-pokery and realignment of this, that, and the other, we're going to call it the PSC Photography Podcast and open up the door to photographs taken with phones or cameras or video recorders or cinematic movie recorders or whatever, anything that can basically make an image. And we're saying, yeah, okay, bring it in, we'll discuss it, and it can be part of the group. One of the reasons is that it will expand the breadth of the topics we can talk about on the show, make the podcast last longer, and have a greater kind of interest for more people. And we will take in whatever is in the PSC Camera Creations MeWe group, whatever is in PSC Photos group, which incidentally remains a competition feeder for Photo of the Month there. But also there's another little group called PSC Videos, which not many people know about, but we can pull them all in together and talk about imaging in this new PSC Photography Podcast. The other change is that I've ditched the makeshift website, which was on the back of my domain, and we've included this now in the main PSC feed RSS. So don't be surprised if you don't see any more podcasts popping up in the Camera Creations feed, because you'll see them in the main PSC feed. Bit confusing, I know. If you're not interested in photography, well, firstly, you won't be hearing me say this, but secondly, you can just ignore the PSC Photography Podcast and just skip to the main PSC ones. It's all a bit of a mess, frankly, but I'm trying to think about how to level it out. And the phoneshowchat.uk will form the basic website for PSC Photography and PSC Camera Creations. I told you it was confusing, and it is. We're on show 20, though, and the first of these new ones, and it's May the 7th. And as a opening theme for our new look podcast, we have decided to throw in something about phones. My best photo taken on with a phone. And I'm joined today by a larger team than normal: Ed House, Chris Clayton, Joe Hickey, Charlie Winston, and Ian Bundy. So all together now. Hello. Well done. So just a quick one then to say that the MeWe group is intact, the Camera Creations one. You can still go and use that, and we will feed into stuff from there. Ahmed B-Bars jumped in and said, just finished listening to the last podcast. Great show as always. Thanks for critiquing my cat shot. Good constructive feedback. Mohan Molly Goda also says, great show again. Enjoy the critiquing. All valid points made on my Kingfisher pick, and it's motivated me to go back to the RAW and see if I have a better option. So I'm glad that those two worked out well, and I think generally the critiquing thing worked really well as well. So obviously people like to do a bit of sending in of photographs, and the panel can have a go at what they think about it. Ed, you've got something to add at this point?
Yeah, I thought it was a really good show. It was one of my favourite ones, maybe selfishly. Just it's nice to get feedback, and you don't always get that much feedback in the forum. Sometimes I think sorry to Chris and Ron for making them look at spiders. I'll try and find something a bit less creepy crawly next time. It was only very small though. Again, the groin photo, again, I at the top of the wooden block basically with the stones and sand on it. That was, I've gone back and I've had a look, and not quite sure that cutting off the corners really does it for me. But again, it was all really good. I've tried it. Maybe I'll try it again.
That was the one with like a tree trunk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay. They're big solid sort of lumps on mm-hmm. on the Suffolk coast. I'm not in terms of the. I was just picking up on one thing you said last time, Chris, the AI side of things. I'm generally anti AI in art, so I'm on the side of I'd rather not see it anywhere near anything artistic. Why do you? So I'm wavering on a little bit, as it has been useful for me too, in some sense. But I do worry about the sort of general trend of using these things in art, because I don't think it really. I think it's overwriting some of the sort of the human part of art, and that art is supposed to be a human endeavor. And I don't think really when you start using AI on it, I don't think that really retains it. I think there's maybe some people do very specific things with it, and that's maybe okay, but I don't think it's the same as just moving some sliders on, you know, you can edit an image in Photoshop or whatever your equivalent is, but I don't think using AI is the same thing.
That brings us to the hot topic of the day, in fact, because in the groups in MeWe, we've been talking about Pete Warner's photograph that he took of a ship leaving Southampton docks. The question came up is because he had it cartoonified. Now he's taken a photograph of the ship with his phone, and he has inside his phone said to Gemini, in this case, an assistant, cartoonify this photograph. And he thought that was okay because the rules of the PSC photo group say that's all right as long as it's on the phone. However, the issue here is that perhaps it's a bit different, because when you use an AI in such a way, firstly, it takes it off of the phone and does it somewhere else, so it's not actually on the phone. The question is, if he'd taken this photograph of the ship and just used Snapseed. If he'd just said to Snapseed, cartoonify this, perhaps that would have been all right. But the broader question is for the group, and I put a poll up in the MeWe group now to get everyone's opinion on it, is whether that's okay or not. Now, I know that, Chris, you've got some strong feelings about this one way, and perhaps you'd like to lead us through that?
I think the issue for me is a misunderstanding of what happens when you send an image to Gemini. So if you open Gemini and upload an image, regardless of what you ask it to do, any edit that is made, it will reconstruct the entire image from scratch using AI, and the image you uploaded is nothing more than a reference image for the AI to learn from and to reconstruct. So obviously the example we've got here is quite an extreme one, so it's more obvious that every pixel on that image is AI constructed. But even if you just took a snapshot of a person or a flower and just said, you know, change a small, for instance, if there's a person, you just said add glasses to this person, it wouldn't just construct a few pixels to render the glasses on a person. The entire image, every pixel, is AI. The resolution will be changed, the bit depth will be changed, file format obviously is going to be a JPEG, but it's going to be way more compressed than the original if you're uploading a full quality. It's AI. From the whole image is an AI generation from the point that you send it into Gemini. For me, it's totally different than if you're in Lightroom or Photoshop and you select a few pixels and you just AI remove them. I think that's fine because, you know, the image for the most part is still captured in the camera. But regardless, I'm not saying Pete didn't go and take a photo of a boat. I'm just saying that once that image is sent to Gemini, that's not a photograph anymore. The output is completely AI generated. It's not a photograph. It's an AI concoction. I don't really think that it would count as a photograph in any way.
Interesting.
Once it's been output.
Interestingly, he posted the original photograph as well, and the back of the boat on the back of the ship is on the original was missing, and the AI has made it all in the frame, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's what AI does. It's just like it's a bit erratic sometimes. Sometimes it's good and it does a better job than others, but regardless of how good or bad the job is, it's not an original photograph. The whole image is an AI generation. Okay. That's my issue with it, really.
Any other thoughts, anyone?
I think at what point do we say, okay, this is AI, because you could do a little bit of AI on an image. Does that qualify it as being AI? or is there like a scale at which point your image is all of AI? Is it 50% AI, 5% AI? You know, there
well,
must be...
Well, it's 100%.
Yes, I agree with you. It is 100% AI. But yeah. At what point do you determine that... So if I make an image in Photoshop and I use 95% AI with generative fill, is that acceptable? Is that okay? Versus one that's completely made with AI?
I think more for me, the point I was just trying to get across is what's happening when someone does upload an image to Gemini. I think people don't realise that the output is AI.
100%
AI.
You think people don't know that the whole image is generated?
I guarantee you they don't know. I mean, that was evident in the MeWe conversation that people didn't realise that the output is 100% AI.
And that's actually something that put me off the Kyra camera in the end totally, was that it basically, the output, I could think of lots of sort of interesting ideas of like, yeah, or you could you offer like family photos, but you could as a service, but you know, have them like, if they want it to be done in a sci-fi way or something like that, you know, could you do all that in that camera? But essentially what you got at the end of it depended on how much you paid per month with the Nano Banana stuff. It's basically like you can have up to a 2K image for, you know, I don't know the precise prices anymore, but you know, a couple of pound a month gets you a 2K image, a tenner a month gets you 4K, and if you pay £20 a month you can have an 8K image. That was, you're not, whatever you've taken it on, whether it was a Micro Four Thirds camera or a smartphone, what you get out of it at the end is not the image you put in. I think it's different to like generative fill, which I think is more what you were suggesting, Charlie, is like, if you've got a subject in the middle and you fill that with, you know, dark, moody light, then I think that's still probably going to be in something like Photoshop.
I think the problem is that, as Chris raised, many people don't seem to realize that they're completely, it's not the same image, it's a completely different image. As Chris said, each pixel is changed to like an AI fake pixel, the resolution has changed. Whereas I think there's legitimate use cases for using AI. So in my case in Photoshop, I'll do a long exposure with light trails, and then I do generative fill over the light trails. They're still the same light trails, but I put generative fill over them to make fake light trails. And then what I do is I reduce the opacity of the fake AI generative fill light trails to enhance my original light trail. So I would do that quite a lot. So it's still AI, but it's still my photo. It's not like a fake photo. I'm just using AI to enhance the original image. I think that's how AI should be used.
Yeah, and then that's almost no different in my view to things like the AI, you know, whether they're actually AI or whether it's just because that's a good thing to market, but all the noise reduction algorithms market themselves as AI now, don't they? So, and at the end of the day, it's a machine working out at some point.
Well, that's the thing with mobile photography. The machines are doing loads of stuff like that anyway, aren't they? So that, like, the bokeh is fake on a lot of these phones because the hardware is just not capable of doing it. Been there in mobile photography.
What I would say about that, Joe, though, is that the portrait modes, they're augmenting existing pixels. The blur they're blurring pixels that you've captured. If you go into, like, if I add a motion blur effect to a sea or something, it's blurring pixels that I've captured. So the pixels that are blurred are the ones that I captured. But obviously when you send an image to Gemini, then the whole image, you know, is getting generated. So,
you know, I definitely agree.
Existing ones.
I agree. I mean, one thing we could say is using a photo editing tool that has AI features is different to using an AI, which is Gemini is an AI app. It's purely AI. So maybe we'll make a rule around what editing apps are.
Well, it's ironic, really, because now the more authentic image is going to be preserved by editing through Photoshop on the desktop than it is by editing it on a phone through Gemini.
Mm-hmm. Any other device. Ian, any thoughts on this whole topic?
Yeah, I think it's a tricky one. I mean, just to add to this, I had a play with this. So I took one of my images of a car and put it into ChatGPT to give me some ideas around how you would put a design into this or make this slightly different. And as Chris mentioned, it completely recreated the image, which was horrible. So I think I'm with you that, again, that there's a lot to what you can add within Photoshop and Lightroom to an edit to maybe create a new image from something from you, but as opposed to getting just ChatGPT or Gemini to create something, I don't think it is. There's nothing of you in it, is there, really? There's no intent from you in the image at all, even if it is a pretty image that like of the boat and stuff. But yeah, I think it's probably a step too far, to be honest.
The other argument as well, Ted, is if you think about it, that cartoonifying something isn't really a photo. And I think Chris could agree, like, what was that shot where you sort of made a silhouette of London, basically made a piece of art? You could argue that that's not a photo.
Digital art, yeah. I mean, I've got no issues with people disputing some of my images as...
Yeah, which is fair, isn't it?
Not photos. I always, you know, when I post them, I say, you know, digital art. You know, which is fine.
And it's fantastic art as well. I love it. And I like what Pete Warner's done, but it's not... for the competition of PSC photos, it's not right for that group. I think the AI group would be great for that. And what's like people producing AI art in there would be good to see. But it doesn't hold place in PSC photos for me.
We've got a poll going on.
I agree, yeah. I agree with Joe. Sorry, Ted. I think the problem with the ship transformed into a cartoon is it's a bit like a digital ship of Theseus, which is a thought experiment that says that, you know, is an object the same object after you change all of its original components over time? I think that's kind of what we're looking at, and that's really the problem with this digital AI generation. It's not the same image that you put in. That's
like question. Triggers Broomstick, isn't it? He's had the same one in Only Fools and Horses for years.
Ed, you had your hand up there.
Yeah, something I've been doing a lot of reading into over the last sort of week or so since the Find X9 Ultra, I almost said Pro there, but there's so many of them. The Find X9 Ultra came out, and I was looking at GSM Arena's review of this. I noticed basically their 26-odd megapixel pictures didn't really look any better than I'd seen from any of the other Honor or you know, Vivo or anyone else, or Samsung or Apple, and I looked into this, and actually since the Snapdragon 8 Gen 2, the sort of the imaging pipelines have been redrawing textures in the way they think it should be. Mm-hmm. So if you're taking pictures of it's really obvious in brickwork and greenery, if you compare it to something like the Sony Xperia phones, it's really obvious when there's a proper digital camera type pipeline behind it, because the textures actually get drawn properly. It's becomes hard to separate what is AI. If they're merging multiple frames and then going, that looks like grass should look like this, that looks like brickwork, the brickwork should look like this, it makes it a very hard sort of line to cross. What's actually taking a photo?
Yeah, this is a good point, because like the Samsung moon shots is a fake moon, isn't it? It's not, yeah. And that's a good example there as well.
And actually, leading on to it, I was comparing the Poco X3 NFC I'm using right now with with the Pixel 7a, and side by side, I noticed the depth of field was different. Taking a picture of a static model just to see what the difference was. Because the two, in theory, they've got identical sensors, identical resolutions, same aperture, should be exactly the same. And I noticed the depth of field was totally different on the Pixel. And what it turns out is part of their imaging pipeline analyzes the whole scene and says, that's the subject, this should be sharp, and then recreates the sort of the image from what it's getting from those multiple shots, which I didn't realise it was doing. It's almost like focus stacking, but with you having no input, it just goes, that's the subject, I want them sharp.
On that note, cameras are using AI for autofocus now, aren't they? So Yeah, it's hitting cameras now.
Okay.
Get out of my imaging pipeline.
The imaging pipeline, is that the same as when you would shoot in RAW or Pro Mode on those phones?
Yes. Yeah, I believe so. Okay. I have got the RAWs somewhere, so I'll double check. Maybe I'll pop it in the group as a little comparison. When I've run them through a converter just to take them from DNG to JPEG, so I can put them on MeWe. But yeah, I think it's exactly the same in both. The Poco being 6 years old and much lower horsepower has just taken a single shot with a single depth of field. And it's really obvious when you see it.
Well, that's not uncommon, I'm sure.
I'd imagine share not.
My scepticism of the Pro RAW, which has sort of deteriorated on the iPhone into this over-processed mess that it's become. People think that's a RAW image, the Pro RAW iPhone output, but it's not. It's as heavily processed and exposure stacked and deep fusioned as their JPEGs are.
Yeah. Yeah, the deep fusion actually is basically just doing computational photography on the RAW from what I've read over the last week. There's no way of getting away from it apart from, I think it's Halide still got their process.
It's Halide and Lightroom has like proper RAW images, and I can understand why you do need computational stuff because when you don't use it in anything other than a sort of stellar light, you just get a noisy mess. So I'm not saying there's no place for a bit of computational processing, but I think it's getting a bit out of hand at this point.
Stellar light, that sounds like a beer. What I was going to say was that in the MeWe group, the PSC Photos MeWe group, I did post a poll earlier today, and it's going to stay up for 3 days, but it looks to at the moment as if 50% of the respondents are saying no, don't allow AI here. So as long as we can clearly define what that means, so that we can say to people that are considering putting up a photo like Pete has, an image like Pete has, then that everyone can be clear about what's acceptable and what's not. I think that we here probably, particularly you, Chris, if you can, come together after that poll's finished and put some wording together so that it can be clear to people in the group what to do and what not to do. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure. And I just want to stress that I'm not having to go at Pete or anything. I don't want to feel like we're picking on him.
No.
It was just an image that kind of provided the
catalyst.
The entry point to this.
And Pete's a lovely bloke, and he'll be more interested in this conversation himself than everyone else anyway. So he'll be absolutely fine with it. So no problem at all.
And we encourage it in a different group, I think.
yeah, too right, too right. Okay, so let's move on to my best photo taken with a phone, the theme of tonight's show. And we've got a whole bunch of photographs in the PSC Photography shared album on Google on Google Photos. So I guess it's a question of everyone picking one out and having a look at. There's so many here that we could be just here all night, so perhaps take it in turns to pick one and we can have a look at it. Where should we start? Ian, you pick one first.
Cool.
It's supposed to be your favorite one taken, of course.
The favourite one of somebody else or mine?
No, yours. I think the idea of the theme for this show was to say this is the best picture I ever took with a phone, as opposed to a camera.
Okay, I think it also combines the sort of the emotion with it as well. I have one that I took 10 years ago. On the iPhone 6S Plus in Bali of the sunset, and I think it was probably my first proper photograph taken on a phone. Mm-hmm. It's still sort of to me it still looks okay today. The one thing I did when I looked back at it, I have listed another photograph which is more sort of colourful, and that was the one I thought I took on the phone, but I actually took that on a camera, so that was a bit of a cheat. But yeah, I think for me,
so the one, the sunset, so the one we're looking at is the one with the boat in the middle, in the middle distance, and the clouds and the red, because people looking at the album just need to know which one it is, really.
Yeah, the one of the boat was taken with an iPhone 6S. The other one I took was with a very small point-and-shoot Samsung NX3, right, yeah. I think. Mm-hmm. The really interesting thing is that it straight from the camera. So these have basically just gone into Google Photos 10 years ago and haven't been molested by Lightroom or anything like that, or even Snapseed. So I think that makes a difference. Again, I don't know, as phones have got better and the cameras have got better, I don't know if they've gradually got worse. But yeah, for me, that's my favorite, because it's has the memory there, but also I was pretty happy with what I actually got out of a phone.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so thoughts on that one, everyone? Do jump in and feed back to Ian.
I really like that one. That's that makes me now miss my iPhone 6S Plus. That was the last time I thought I liked the iPhone colours. I rue the day I smashed mine, and I should have just got it fixed instead of getting something new. That's really nice. I like the balance, the way you just got the boat. The boat is slightly off centre to the left. It just works. It's just like almost deliberate enough to not look like it should have been in the centre. It's just far enough off. Mm-hmm. And it's a really nice balance.
Anyone else?
I really like it. And I think there's something kind of authentic about these. I think me and Ian have got kind of similar kind of timeline in terms of phones and cameras, and around this sort of time when you're taking phone photos, there's something really sort of rewarding, probably more than ever. As we get more cynical, you kind of forget how kind of rewarding, gratifying it was just to get a really nice image, sort of banging camera all done, and it's kind of nice to see an unprocessed or just a really nice scene like this. So I can see why these sort of images kind of push you forward to keep going.
Cool.
And it does make you think, if you do need this brand new Ultra X9 Pro or the Leica phone when we were producing these sort of things 10 years ago, mm-hmm. With an iPhone with much smaller sensors and a single camera rather than multiple cameras on the phone itself. I don't know if we're getting lazy or we're losing maybe a little bit of the creativity that we had back in the day.
There must have been for the day when you could put a phone down and it didn't wobble all over the place.
Yes. There must have been a lot of competition for you, though, Ian, in selecting your favourite photograph, because we've seen quite a lot of your photographs of your Formula One stuff, and some of them have been just stunning, but this one is your favourite, so it must have that special edge for you.
Yeah, I think you've got to feel something to a photograph, and it was just that... the sunsets in Bali were amazing. So whenever you go back and look at that photograph, you bring back memories. And I think that's having a connection. I probably see that with a lot of Chris's photos as well, that you have that memory, you're taken back there. So I think it's not just from a technical perspective, it's the emotion you've got within there as well.
Sure. Okay. Chris, you can go next. You're the best photograph with a phone you ever took.
Well, similar to Ian, and not to disregard your brief too much, Ted, I don't know if it's the best, but it's probably the most pivotal photo I've taken on a phone. And for me, this should be the very first image in the album. It's off of the West Pier in Brighton at sunset. So it's quite a kind of a contrasty blue and orange scene. So this was taken, I was going to check the metadata now, iPhone 13 Pro Max. So this has come a few years into me really sort of getting into photography on the phone, which was kind of spearheaded by my listening to you and Steve for years, and then I was desperate to get photo of the week, and I was just sort of taking really crappy photos that gradually got better, and I was getting a few photos of the weeks. And then I got kind of really, really into photography, and just on the phone. And I got the iPhone 12 and then the iPhone 13 Pro Max I use for this. And I came across an app called Even Longer, which I don't think many people will be that familiar with, but it's like a long exposure. It captures long exposures through frame averaging. So it's kind of capturing one image repeatedly and then merging them together to sort of create the illusion of a long exposure. So this image was so important for me because it was kind of the first time I was really out there, you know, dedicated photography with intent. I had my tripod, I had my phone attached to a tripod, you know, at sunset, which probably looked a bit sad, but I was out there, and I set this long exposure up for quite a long time.
Chris, the sequence of photographs in this album are not great. So it'd probably be best if we describe what it is. Is this the one with the three yellow boys in the water?
No, it's the West Pier, which is like the burnt out shell of a pier.
Is everyone clear about which one it is? I can't see.
It's right at the bottom.
Oh, okay. So the what? Right. Okay, the one with it's right in the centre of the frame, yeah?
Bottom right.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the pier right in the centre. Yep, okay, I've got it, okay.
Yeah, so I was out there at sunset, and this is a five-minute exposure, so I sort of... Well, I had no phone to play with because it was taking the image, so I just had to stand there and wait for 5 minutes. So I got this image home, and I was just like gobsmacked that I was able to catch this with a phone. I've got a few problems with it now, looking back at it, but at the time, I absolutely loved it. And it kind of was a turning point where I just was outgoing anywhere I could to get long exposures. I put a couple more in this group as well that I really like. And this kind of led me into the whole photography thing where I am now with the proper cameras and doing a lot of the long exposure stuff that I do now. So for me, that was kind of a really pivotal image, and it was like a turning point.
Very nice, yeah. Any thoughts, anyone?
I actually remember that period where you was taking quite a lot of long exposure shots with your iPhone. It was really, really good stuff you were posting. Yeah, I just wanted to add that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the iPhone 13 Pro Max I maintain is probably the best kind of middle ground of processing and camera that the iPhone's ever done. I think once it went to the 14, they started getting a bit heavy-handed with the processing. So.
13 Pro Max had a good battery as well, which was
it did,
which was
yeah.
free. So yeah,
it was a beast, that phone. Yeah,
Very good. Okay, Charlie, what was your favourite shot?
My one, I think, the one I took in Hong Kong of the skyscrapers with the poster of the woman. So that I took on the S25 Ultra. And I actually had all my lenses with me, but not the 135 Sony G Master, because I just sold it. So, and I was like climbing up a hill, so I needed something lightweight to take the photo. And I just packed all my gear away. I didn't really want to unpack it just for this one shot. So I just whipped out my phone and just took that photo.
So this is this is lots and lots of buildings, and right in the middle of the frame is a female woman on the side.
Yeah, so I wanted a shot with like a lot of compression, and I think the longest lens I had was the 24-70 G Master 2, and it just wasn't enough. So I think I did this one at, I think, 5x zoom, and it just came out wonderfully. It was really good. It was a bright sunny day. The edit I did was minimal, just made it a bit more contrasty, played about on the color wheel, and yeah, I was just really happy with that. I think it's usually with a phone I appreciate the photos more when I really want to make use of the phone, you know, not going out especially with a lens just to get one shot, which is what I usually do, which is a bit sad in a way, because I could just use my phone, and that's what I did here, and it just worked out perfectly.
Mm.
So, yeah, I'm just really happy with that.
Nice shot. Any thoughts, anyone?
Yeah, Charlotte, I've got a question. So I really love it. It's an epic shot.
Thanks.
How do you think it would have been different if you'd have taken it on a camera? What would have been different? What would we be seeing differently to this? Would it be just more compression, more popping of the billboard, or?
Yeah, so I did take it with my camera with the 24-70, but it didn't have enough reach. And in post, I would have had to crop it in. I think I did crop it in, and it just, even though I've got more megapixels to play with, it didn't come out well. And with the Samsung camera, and as Chris was discussing with, I think, the Pro Raw on the iPhone, you get this terrible sharpening, like just over-the-top processing. It's horrendous. And I was fortunate enough not to get that with, I think there's a cut-off limit with the Samsungs. If you go over like 5X, then the processing starts to kick in. You know, when you go 10X or 20X, it just looks horrendous. But here I was quite lucky, and it just, the colors came out well. But with the camera, I wasn't getting the compression I wanted because obviously there's a lot of buildings there, and it just didn't look right. And I was getting too much of the framing around the harbour, which I didn't want. I didn't want any water. I just wanted the skyscrapers and then like a portrait of the woman in the poster.
Did you, I'm sorry to just keep on, but did you go out with the intention of getting this shot, or was this, you were up and you saw it?
Yeah, funny enough, this was just complete luck, really. I went there to try and get a view of the harbour and a picture of the skyscrapers, which is very different to this. You know, if you Google Hong Kong, you get the classic Hong Kong harbour. That's what I was trying to get in the daytime, those kind of images with the rolling hills in the background. And when I got my shots, I wasn't actually that happy with the shots I got. There was a lot of haze in the sky, and it just didn't come out well. And I thought, oh, if I had a longer lens, I could do compression and then get the shot I wanted without the haze of the clouds. So I was feeling a bit annoyed about not getting the shot I wanted. And as I was walking back, I just saw this poster, and I was on Logan Road, where Victoria Peak is. I don't know if anyone knows it, but it's actually free to go up there. Otherwise, you've got to go through the tourist trap and like go in the complex and pay to get the same picture. So I just saw that and took out my phone, and I was there for maybe a minute just snapping photos on my phone. And, you know, that was the one I really enjoyed. That's the one I liked the most.
Very nice. Okay, cool. Ed, the best photograph you ever took on a mobile phone?
This has been a difficult one for me because I've gradually, as I've gotten more into cameras, I've lost interest in phones. I just found, especially once we lost the shutter buttons and the decent controls that the Lumias had, I stopped really enjoying it. So I had to go back a long way. I think the favourite one for me is, it goes right back to the Nokia N8 sunset I took from a pub called the Ramshell Arms. I don't know if Ian's been to that one. It's on the Suffolk coast. And I just remember being sort of blown away at the time with just how much it had captured. Yes, nowadays it'd probably looked at and think, well, that's not, you know, that's blown out where the sun is and the shadows don't have that much detail in them. But it just captured the scene exactly as it was to my eyes. So, and that was, I remember the first time I was like, wow, you know, this phone camera can really do something.
So this is the one that's looking out across the water with the sun coming down the middle and an umbrella in the kind of middle right, yeah?
Yeah, and you can just about see there's like a couple just very softly lit by the sunset.
Yeah.
And you can very, very darkly see Adnams written on the umbrella and stuff. There's still details there. It's just dark because it was dark. And that's how it should have been. And the sort of the very like feathery clouds in the sky, I was just really impressed with all that detail. And it was really hard to think of anything else that I was that pleased with, to be honest.
So that was Nokia N8.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. All the way back in 2012.
Okay.
So that this poses the question of what the problem is with mobile photography to a certain degree. It's gone too HDR heavy, because I think this is a wonderful image, but a modern smartphone would have had the whole foreground would have been really bright and you'd see the couple and it wouldn't have the same impact.
Yeah,
I think that's why people like Xiaomi quite a lot, because they try and have this more of this type of look out of the camera.
Is it the Leica or Authentic or something?
Yeah, I
have found Ted's very kindly lent me a pair of the Xperia Mark IVs, and I've been playing with those cameras, and I do just find that having a shutter button and access to proper controls makes so much difference to whether I actually want to use it as a camera. So it's been nice to rediscover that.
Ed, you say that you don't like shooting with a phone, and you prefer like a real camera. Is that because the phones, as we discussed previously, they're more over-sharpened, and as Joe said, you know, there's more processing and more light in the picture now, so you prefer the older phones where you get this more original image where nothing's over-processed?
Possibly, yeah. I hadn't really thought of it from that way. I was thinking of it purely from the ergonomics, because it's that thing. I think it's, if my finger's on a shutter button, I'm feeling like I've got a camera there. Do you know what I mean?
But then again, you don't always have a camera on you when you go out, but you always have a phone on you.
But I say that, I tend to carry one pretty much everywhere. I must get so many looks that I just ignore. I normally have one in my bag at work somewhere. I'll try and fit something in. Micro Four Thirds doesn't take up that much room. but you've got a good point there, and it's probably also because I'm just not enjoying the output so much. But I was really impressed with the Xperia 5.4 in particular, the little 2.5x camera, which matches 60mm equivalent focal length, matches exactly a lens I've got on Micro Four Thirds and an old Nikkor lens I've got from the APS-C
DSLRs. Everyone here would agree with having a viewfinder is obviously better, but it's always a balance between convenience, isn't it, with a phone versus having, you know, the ergonomics and the proper viewfinder.
Definitely. And Sony, having that Sony, I was first shocked at how sharp that 2.5x camera is, but also then having sort of that caught my interest, I then started looking at the actual pictures, and their processing is so much more natural. So I think that's maybe something I need to play around with a bit more and see just how much that brings back the enjoyment. It's hard to separate it from the ergonomics as well, though, because it's on that phone.
Yeah. Talking about processing again, and I think Chris will be able to help me out here. With the Lightroom app on my Samsung and presumably on iPhone as well, it removes the sharpening from the camera on the phone. So if you wanted to shoot on your phone without the horrible processing, you can do that just using the Lightroom app. That's quite good. Don't know, Chris might be able to expand on that, but it's really good if you just want like a default view from your camera.
It's taking a genuine raw image from the sensor, but as I said before, that is fine in good conditions, but as soon as you get in anything slightly lower light, then you're going to be faced with like ISO through the roof and a really, really noisy image, where exposure stacking does make a bit more sense. What would be nice is if you could kind of augment what processing is done in terms of exposure stacking and sharpening and noise reduction. I'd probably just take the exposure stacking and leave everything else. But you can get raw images, but the sensors are so small in the Samsungs and the iPhones that you need to be going up to the 1-inch Chinese phones, I think, to make it really worthwhile to get a genuine raw image out of it.
I've often found that I don't tend to want to process my phone pictures, because again, it's that I use the phone for the convenience, not because I've got any intent for it, I suppose. So I don't tend to think that way, but that has been, I've had my position knocked by the Xperias, shall we say. I'm questioning my reasoning again now.
Okay. Joe, let's go to Joe next, and
yeah, you might have to refresh bought. Because I've added some in there. Again, okay. I'd say, I'm not going to say they're my best, but a phone that I was quite fond of is the X100 Ultra, my only Ultra phone I've had. And you can see the merry-go-round. It was going very, very fast. This was on auto mode. You see the shot of the man I took and where he was. Like, the telephoto really captured it really well. The shutter speed was good. This was on auto. Like, you'd think that'd be an absolute mess on the phone. But it's come out quite well, I thought, at least. I don't know what you guys think.
It's a great photo. I really like that.
Thank you. I mean, I was a bit in shock that they actually nailed it. I didn't expect it to be able to do it on the phone.
So we're talking about the guy, the one with the guy's head in the middle, are we?
Yeah, looking right, like okay. Confused.
Yeah, okay.
You can see where I put the wider shot just to show you whereabouts he would be situated in there and how far away I was.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's come out really well. And I really do like taking photos of people taking photos. So the London Eye one there, someone, my friend taking a shot. I think it got the exposure really well there as well.
Cool. Okay. Nice one. And the BlackBerry, I like the BlackBerry.
Yeah, I was really impressed with the detail and the bokeh and like the natural bokeh. The phone really performed really well with that. Again, this is auto. Like, I'm very lazy. I'd never really go on pro modes on phones. And I was really quite impressed by it. This is all X100 Ultra, these.
Yeah, yeah. Ed, you like your macro. Any thoughts on that BlackBerry?
He's had to step out for a sec.
No, it's all right. I'm back now.
He's back.
No, it's really good, isn't it? Looks very sort of clean without too much, you know, interference. So maybe there's something else I can look at for slightly better, slightly more natural pictures.
That's
looks really good.
A Vivo X100 Ultra.
Yeah.
That brown stuff just towards the top of it is very sharp, isn't it?
Mm.
Very nice,
yeah.
Indeed.
I do like my macros, so I'll have to try and come up with something. We won't have BlackBerries for months yet, will we? So I can't do a BlackBerry. But
okay,
go and do a test.
The one that I wanted to throw in the pot was my snooker picture, which sees the light of day every now and again. I took this on a. Well, it tells me it was a Nokia 8, but I think it was a Nokia 8 Sirocco, personally, the phone that I really loved. And there's a couple of things I don't particularly like about my snooker shot, which is that the front red ball is not round, so the wide angle has just that is just not round enough for me. It's made a slightly egg shape. And the other thing is that I don't particularly like the fact that you can see stuff in the black around the back of the table. On reflection, I think that it might be better if it was completely black back there. Now, I know that you guys would easily be able to manage to do that using Photoshop or whatever tools, but I'd have no idea where to start, frankly. But laying those two things aside, I just really like the juxtaposition of the balls, the colours, the texture of the cloth, and I just thought it was a really nice picture, and I enjoyed taking it. Any thoughts on that, anyone?
I've been around long enough to remember this. I think,
yeah,
the first time. And it's one of my favourites. It's one of the favourites in this whole album. I love it so much, and the snooker cue, it makes the image because you've got the perfect leading line. Mm-hmm. And you've got what I love the most, where there's no overlapping balls, you know, crossing paths. They're all separated, and they all kind of form a triangle towards the back corner. I agree, though, if you brought those shadows down at the end, it would add a bit more contrast. But as you said, that would be easily done. So
The question
I think
is,
you should give it a go.
Was you actually playing snooker, or did you just go there to take pictures?
No, this was during a game I was playing.
No, I really like it because I like snooker as well, and I often use the cue to sort of try and line up shots to one side like that, and it makes me think of someone trying to line up their shot.
You're right, yeah. Okay.
I'm rubbish at snooker, though.
I just think the colours are nice as well. And if you look at the as you tend to get with snooker photographs, the reflection, the shining of the lights above the table coming down on the balls at different angles. I like the whole kind of way in which that worked. So is there anything I can do to make my near red ball not egg-shaped?
Not really, but I wouldn't want to anyway. I think I like it. It kind of adds to the kind of the leading lines from the corners.
Yeah, personally. Yeah. I like the different texture on the cloth as well, like the darker and lighter areas all the way across the whole table.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay, thanks very much for that bit of feedback. So, right, where are we going to go from here? We've done that bit, Ed, you put some notes in the recording notes here. Did we cover this while you went along, or is there something still to say from there?
Yeah, we did, I think.
Okay, yeah. So Chris, you did the next bit. Same question to you. Is that covered now, or do we need to visit that?
I think so, yeah. I think so.
Okay, and Ian, one more bit for you. Did you cover that in yours?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was a similar sort of journey that Chris took from sort of phone photography into going into cameras. But I still think there's a place for mobile because it's with you all the time and you can experiment with it. So, yeah.
What, okay. I will pick up one thing Ian said, if that's okay, where he said that things really took off with the introduction of Pro Raw. That was exactly my experience. I remember I got the iPhone 12 pretty much specifically for Pro Raw because that was kind of revolutionary, where it was stacking raw images, giving you a lot of leeway in the edit. And it was a massive difference at the time. It really did make a huge difference in terms of how you could edit the images. So I think Apple really sort of hit gold with Pro Raw and they kind of started to ruin it in the last few iterations. But yeah, that was a big deal for me as well.
Great. Okay. We did invite members of the group to put their photographs in the album. And I think the only one outside of us to have done that is probably, as he scans through to check, Chad Dixon, who's put in a photograph he took with his Samsung Galaxy S25 FE, which is a picture, a black and white picture of a bunch of people walking up and down some stairs, presumably at some London tube station, which I guess is up for critique. Let's have some thoughts on that one. Has everyone got that in front of them now? Any thoughts?
I like it. Yeah, rule of thirds.
And it's quite interesting because all the people in the bottom left are kind of in black and all the people on the top right are in white. Mm.
Yeah, there's like a really nice triangle, contrast, isn't there? Like a diagonal line where the top half, as you said, are white and then the bottom half are all wearing black.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Anyone else?
And also with that, the ones in black are going up. And the ones in white are coming down. It's like almost planned.
Just putting patterns in there that aren't actually there.
Chad was standing there all day to make sure that he got the right combination of upwalkers and downwalkers.
That's what makes for an interesting image, though, isn't it? We're all looking at it and finding patterns and there's points of interest.
It's a good photo. I mean, I like it. What aspect ratio is that? 16 by 9?
No, it's wider. I think it's 21 by 9, if I had to guess.
Yeah, but I think it really works for the shot itself. It's again, it's one of those things that makes you look at it more and more and see things, which I guess is the sort of the art of creating a great photo is that people look at it for longer than just swiping past it. So
tell a story.
Mm.
Yeah.
What I actually like is you've got like a house at the back on the right, and right the tip of the roof is just touching the line of the subway entrance, which I kind of like.
And there's also a pair of eyes looking out from the top of it.
Even that pattern, there's like a white-fronted triangle and then a darker-fronted triangle on the other side.
It's just if it was my photo, I would use Photoshop and I'd actually make the other side of the building the same size as the one on the right, and I'd make it so it touches the top entrance.
Yeah.
Just so you've got symmetry. Mm. That's just me, though.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that catches my eye, which is annoying, is see the muck on the stairs on the right, on the white bit of stairs.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's also interesting reflections and shadows, though. So on the left, you've got quite a lot of reflections going on the wall. And then on the right, you've got long shadows from the sun. there, as you say, there's lots of stuff to pick out in that picture. Mm. So thanks for putting that in there. I think I'm right in saying that's the only one. But if you're posting photographs into the group for discussion, please put them into the shared album. If you put them in to the shared album like Chad did there, then we know what you mean pretty much. You know, you're happy to have them discussed. But if you just put them in the group, then we're not quite sure. So the link to the shared album is on the website at phoneshowchat.uk, so you can always find it there. And let us see what you've been shooting and we'll add it in. So now we move to the kind of catch-up, the fortnightly catch-up from anyone that's been taking interesting photographs or anything that's in that photography album still that we haven't discussed. The world is your oyster. Chris, you've got quite a few that I think were over from the week before, the last show, weren't they?
Yeah, I've got some holdovers, which is lucky because I haven't really done anything in the interim. A few weeks back, took a little walk to a place called Slindon Estate, which is just past Arundel. And it wasn't a dedicated photography trip. It was like a family, you know, day out, a family walk. But there were some amazing bluebells there. And I just had the one lens with my Sony camera, which was a 70-200, which I thought might help with a bit of compression, which turned out to be the case. So I got one kind of bluebell image that I'm really happy with. It's just kind of a vista of all the trees with some light coming through. It wasn't the best time of day, middle of the day, harsh light. I didn't really fancy the 3 o'clock sunrise trip on that day. So I took a similar image with the iPhone just for contrast, which actually came out quite well, but it's a little bit busier and a little bit more kind of fussy. But I think my favourite image from that trip was the layers of countryside. I think I labelled it in the notes there. It'll be obvious which one it is. It's kind of a row of trees and a more orangey row of trees behind it. I think that was my favourite image because it's got kind of a watercolory kind of look to it, which was fairly out of camera. I just threw a preset on it.
Looks like a painting. Is it
yeah,
AI?
It does a bit, yeah. I'm not crazy about the composition. There's a bit of foreground, which I couldn't really get right to not be so distracting. Didn't really matter how I cropped it. It kind of annoyed me a little bit. So it's not perfect, but I do like the feel of the image. So I got some nice bluebells. I'm happy with that. Couple of macros as well.
I think that the foreground green matches the background blue sky in terms of position in the frame, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's what I was going for.
Yeah, but, right, yeah. Okay.
But I don't know. I just wasn't totally happy with it, but I'm a bit fussy like that. So that was that trip. Yeah, so I was fairly happy with it, but not, you know, nothing groundbreaking. And I also got the drone out for the first time in a little while, just up from mine. There's a load of rapeseed fields. Is that what they're called, rapeseed?
Yeah.
Bright yellow flowers. I've got my DJI Flip back into the air. I'm getting a bit fed up with it. It's useless in anything sort of beyond a strong breeze. You get all kinds of warnings and it barely moves. I think it's got worse in that aspect. But I also kind of like how sort of cheap and crap it is. You know, I just throw it in a bag and get it up. And I'm not so anxious about flying it as I was with more expensive drones. So I'm quite happy. I've got some top-down views, which are my favourite kind of drone shots. Get some nice patterns and nice abstracts. So I put all those in the album as well. And the one I like the most is the one with the kind of the two more prominent lines coming diagonals from the left-hand side. It's just a really simple image, but I just find it quite pleasing.
I was going to say that. And it could be a picture of a sofa or a cushion, couldn't it?
Yeah, it could be anything. I kind of like that. And it maybe, you know, if it was out of context, people would have to look a few times to find work out what it is. So
nice.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed my little drone flight. I had a bit of anxiety because I was about 1.5 kilometers out at this furthest point, and I didn't realize that it was obviously a lot windier where it was than where I was, so it struggled a bit, but just made it back.
Very good.
But yeah, I that's all I've done, really. Not too much.
Well, it's more than I did. Anyone else, any thoughts on that or any additions of your own from the album, other stuff that's been put in there?
I think I'm with you on the last shot, the drone shot. I think that's really great. The two lines on that, and also probably the first shot of the bluebells. So I live around the corner from a wood which has bluebells, and I go there on a regular basis, and I just can't find a composition for the life of me. So it's nice to see someone shooting something that's acceptable.
Yeah, you need to find these kind of, I think they're called like artificial forests or something that are man-made. They get really clean floor.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have all the messy sort of branches and trees on the floor. But I had to go quite a way to get this one. So I was a bit disappointed because there was a more local one that I go to, but they've done some deforestation, so it's really messy. And I'd always try and get there for sunrise, but this one was just too far out. I'd have to get up at 3 a.m. for a sunrise on this one, which I'm not doing. So, yeah, I was quite happy with it, Ian. Cheers.
Okay. All right, then. Anyone else? Charlie, you've been out with your camera?
No, I haven't. No, okay. Unfortunately. So I haven't got any pictures to show, only the old ones that I've taken over the years with my phone.
Okay. Ed has had to drop out of the call. He did have something else to say about his S5D, which is similar to the camera you've got, isn't it, Joe?
Yeah, quite similar.
Yeah, but I think the D take something away or make it more... I can't remember now. There was something they changed about the D version, wasn't there?
So mine's, I think, the newer... newer camera.
Okay.
Mine's Mark II, 5 Mark II.
Right, okay. Well, if we're done with those items, then we'll move into the rumours and news for a double header from Chris and Charlie, by the looks of it. So a couple of items in there. What have we got?
I guess it's not a rumour now, because Sony literally today dropped confirmation that the new Sony A7 R6 will be announced on May the 13th. This is the A7R line's their flagship stills camera. I've got the A7R5 like Charlie has and like Ian used to have. So we'll be throwing our cameras into the sea next week. The rumour side of it is the rumoured specs, which are kind of crazy. So there will be a slight bump in resolution. We're at 61 megapixels now on the A7R 5, and it's going to be 67 megapixels. The big thing here is it's fully stacked sensor, which is definitely unprecedented for a full frame with this resolution. We've got the Sony A1 and the A1 II, which is 50 megapixel with a stacked sensor, but this is, you know, obviously a lot more resolution. And to have the kind of speed that a fully stacked sensor will give you is going to be interesting. They're saying 30 frames.
Can you very briefly, for those that might not know, explain what that means, the fully stacked sensor?
Yeah, so I don't know the physics of it completely, but the long and short of it is it means that you can take a lot more images in a short space of time because the readout speed is so much quicker. The physics of it, to be honest, are probably beyond me.
Okay.
But, yeah, it just means that at the moment, the A7R 5 is on, I think, 11 frames a second. And now they're talking about 30 frames a second, full RAW, full 14-bit RAW, which is kind of crazy for this kind of resolution, because typically the higher the resolution, the slower the readout speed, because there's so much more data to capture, which is why a lot of the higher speed cameras are lower resolution, like the A93 or the Canon R1. So this will be interesting, but this isn't the only big news on the camera. They're talking about a whole new body design, a whole new UI, which is what I'm really interested in. There'll be a new battery format, which will be replacing, I think, about 10 years history of the SZ1000 battery. To say they're talking about 50% longer battery life. The main issue with this camera is that it's kind of going to be better than the Sony A1 II, which is their best camera, for less money, although this camera is going to cost around $5,000. The A1 II is at, I think, $7,000. So There's a few confused commenters on the Alpha Rumor site asking why would anyone now buy the A1II for 7,000 when this camera kind of seems to be way better, way newer, and it's going to have a whole new UI for a couple of grand less. So
right.
I was skeptical of this camera at first. Now I'm really, really interested, especially in the new UI, because banging on about it for ages, how old and sort of bedraggled these old camera UIs are. So I'm hoping they really try and push it forward and have a bit more of a kind of a phone interface, a bit more intuitive.
Yeah, but would you see $5,000 on a
camera? No, I haven't got $5,000 to drop on it, but if I did, I'd be more interested than I was seeing what's coming.
How much realistically we get for your body?
I think Charlie, you looked at this, didn't you? Didn't you see how much you'd get from MPB when?
Yeah, I think for my one, for the A7R5, you're looking at about, I think they're offering like 1,500.
Yeah, not that much. Really.
Yeah.
So you're still going to have to find, even through eInfinity or someone, grey market, you're still going to be looking at another $2,500-$3,000, aren't you?
Yeah, no one's going to pay that. I mean, like, okay, it's better than our cameras, but for what? I mean, you know, the A7R5 is incredible for low light. What are you actually paying for? Incremental improvements? I mean,
yeah, it will all be iterative.
Yeah.
But you still want it, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I didn't really need to go from the A7IV to the A7R5, but I did it anyway. That was a far less expensive upgrade than this would be. So.
I realised what I said when I said about selling your body could have been interpreted the wrong way, so I'm glad you guys realised.
Yeah, I'll get
a
lot less for that one. So we'll see next week, but also on the same day, another sort of confirmed rumour, if that's a thing, is that Sony are finally replacing the ancient 100 to 400 with the 100 to 400 fixed aperture f4.5 internal zoom lens. This lens is obviously going to be amazing, GM branded. It will be optically perfect. I wish I could afford this lens. I had a couple of versions of the older one. I wasn't happy with it. I'd love to have a go at this one. But again, they're talking about $5,000 or more for this camera, for this lens. So I'll just be watching the reviews, I think. And someone's added in, I don't know who it was it you, Charlie, or Ian, the Nikon?
Yeah, I think probably the real news this week was the coming soon, the Nikon 120 to 300 2.8 with teleconverter. I can see this being probably a lot more than the Sony camera. There's no prices or anything yet, but I would love this.
What's the weight though?
I it looks pretty small. And if you look at the 400 prime, I mean that's definitely serviceable, but I don't think I mean it's a professional lens, but with the teleconverter built in and experiencing the 400 2.8, it's the best lens I've ever used. So I'd imagine this being very expensive, unfortunately.
You'd get, 400 f4 with the teleconverter, or 420 f4?
Yeah. So,
which is amazing by itself, isn't it?
Yeah, because the 400 with the teleconverter, I think that goes to, f4 and gives you 560 mil, but I say it's tack sharp. It's a really good lens, but I think it's definitely going to be out of my league. But it's interesting. As I say, Nikon don't bring out lenses that often, and something like this is where they've sort of launched the trailer for it before they've sort of given any details. So I'll be interested to see how much it goes for, and also if I've got an opportunity to maybe borrow one later on this year once it's released. So
what do you reckon? It'll be a five-figure price on this?
I would think so. I mean, if you look at the 400 2.8, retail is 14 grand, so I would see this being around the 8-10 grand mark, I would assume, but it would be nice to try one anyway.
Charlie's bought houses for less than that.
Very nice. Okay, start saving everyone for all that lovely gear. Charlie, you had some stuff to say about niche cameras?
Yeah, just an observation. There was an article, a video actually, on DP Review, just talking about how photography is moving more towards niche cameras and how modern cameras are, you know, already better than most photographers, and that the bottleneck is usually skill, vision, or creativity rather than the hardware, and how the industry is moving kind of in that direction of catering more towards kind of like digital lifestyle, nomad travel lifestyle consumerism. So you'd have like one camera for like street, one for low light, one for infrared. And I think this is really the market's way of like trying to extract more money, you know, from the customer. It's saying you can't have one really expensive camera. You have to have several expensive cameras, really, just to achieve the same goal, which is sad in a way, because I've kind of been trapped in this kind of mindset. I have several cameras, each for a specific use case. And I think the market is kind of going in that direction. That's just kind of what they were discussing. And they were looking at like the Fujifilm X-Pro3, how that's a very specialized street style. I think it's a rangefinder camera. And then you have that abysmal Fuji X-Half camera, which is just a joke. that's the one with the, I think it's a portrait-orientated back screen or something. It just looks terrible.
The sensor is wonky, isn't it?
Yeah. So if you want to shoot landscape, you've got to do portrait.
You have to turn it the other way, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which is a joke, isn't it?
It is. It's outrageous.
It is outrageous. And they're trying to really cater towards younger users. And you weren't like this, Ted, who are, they prefer shooting without a viewfinder.
Yeah.
So they're bringing more and more cameras to the market without a viewfinder. And they're kind of like, you know, not focusing on like the OGs, the people who have been in the game for a long time. You just want a camera that works with a viewfinder. I mean, that is what the camera is about. I don't want a camera without a viewfinder. I see that as, that's something I don't want as a consumer. So it was really going into depth how camera brands are trying to attract new audiences, younger audiences, through this kind of hybrid photo video user camera, which is ironic because you could just use your phone if that's what you wanted, you know, photo and video. You wouldn't buy a video camera, would you? You'd just use a phone. But this is what they're trying to do with their marketing. And AI wasn't really mentioned, but I do think AI in the use of, this is my own thought, I think using AI to create predictive composition would be a good idea to garner greater support for new users into the camera market. What I mean when I say that is like actually having the screen give you predictive guidance of the, you know, leading lines, diagonals, rule of odds, these kind of things that newbies wouldn't understand. Having that just pop up in real time on the rear view screen or the viewfinder, I think that would be really a really good use of AI. And it was just talking about these different things for building loyalty with customers that are yet to enter the market. Yeah.
Good article. Yeah. It sounds very interesting. And I think you're right. All those things that you just said. And in fact, this goes a bit back to Ian. You were talking on the PSC about unbundling and taking apart the... the converged everything, weren't you? And this is kind of a similar kind of theme, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm sceptical with Charlie on this, as they just want to sell you more cameras. But following this, I have been on eBay looking at 1020s and the Lumia N8 and stuff like that. I'd be interested to go back to that and see what those cameras can do on those phones. They're relatively quite cheap now to try those niche cameras, I think. So, but yeah.
You already get like niche lenses, don't you, for like certain things. So yeah, they're just, it is all about getting money.
But you get better, you get more bang for your buck, don't you, Joe, with a niche lens versus a niche camera. I mean, there's only so much you could do with a niche camera. With a niche lens, you can get a, I don't know, a tilt shift or an infrared spectrum lens or something.
Or macro.
You just get more more for your money's worth, really.
Yeah, I've got that 9mm, and I've had loads of fun with that.
I still want to get one of them, actually.
Yeah, they're good fun, and they're pretty cheap.
It's a shame that Ed's had to drop out, really, because he would have something to say about niche. Some of the lenses he goes after are really niche, and he's had some good results with those, that macro lens, particularly. That I think it's a 30mm Olympus Zuiko, isn't it? But he'll correct me, no doubt, in the group afterwards if that's wrong. But, yeah, so is all this a big problem, or are we just going to embrace it and move on? The AI thing you were talking about, Charlie, sounds... at first, I thought you were going to say, this is terrible, but you actually said, this could actually work.
No, it's fantastic, because you're just basically taking a process that you would learn over X amount of months or years, and you're speeding it up for the user. So why wouldn't that be a good thing? I mean, I think that's great. You know, if you could learn, if you could process information, whether it's cameras, language, mathematics, whatever, if you can speed that up for the end user, then that's a win, I think. And I can summarize the article by, you know, in one sentence, and I don't like this word, vibes over image quality is now the real category when it comes to creating new cameras. So they're looking at different, you know, it's the experience, selling the user an experience over selling the user a product that can generate better image quality. But that's what I'm all about. I'm all about, like, you know, creating high fidelity images. I'm not interested in the vibes or the experience, what the camera can offer me. I'm more interested in the image quality. But that's the direction the market seems to be going in with this kind of experimentation with niches.
It's quite good to get the younger users onto a camera and away from phones. It's like their first camera. I think that's a nice aspect of it, I guess.
I think so. But I think with a with a phone, I would be all for a smartphone as they are now, but with an actual physical shutter button on the phone. Like I think Ed mentioned the new Oppo phone, the Oppo X Ultra 9, that has a physical shutter button, and then so does the iPhone 17 Pro Max and Pro. They have like a shutter button that has like a haptic kind of, you can toggle it for the zoom or something. I think that's a great idea, and I wish more smartphones had a button just dedicated to taking photos.
Yeah, well, this is a conversation for another time, but phones are trying to become more like cameras all the time now with their external lenses on these ultras. We'll have to get into that discussion another time, but it'd be good.
Okay, last shout out to Chris and his photograph in the album of the three buildings with a giant long dinghy over the top of them, which I think is a terrific image taken with an iPhone 14 Pro Max in December 22. If everyone could have a look at that, and perhaps Chris, you could tell us what that is, where it is, and a bit about it.
That's Marina Bay Sands in Singapore. So this was, I still only had a phone at that point, no camera, I believe. This is a long exposure made using even longer, and I can find, it doesn't give me the correct metadata, but yeah, I think it was about 5 or 6 minutes. That's what I normally used to do. I used to do way too long, to be honest, but it did kind of give the sky an ethereal look, and it was taken at blue hour. It's probably one of my favorite images I've ever taken on the phone, because it's got the orange lights and it's got the color contrast with the blue water and the blue sky. One thing to know about Even Longer as an app, and if anyone's into sort of long exposures, I would highly recommend it, is that it takes genuine raw images from the sensor, as we were mentioning before, but because they're being stacked, it eradicates all noise and you get the cleanest image you'll ever see from a genuine raw photo. It's cleaner than I get out of my Sony now, because it's stacking so many raw images that all the noise is gone and you just get pure detail and there's no processing other than the frame averaging. I just really like this image as well, Ted. It's well-centered and it's got a minimal amount of colour, but just enough to pop.
Very nice. Yeah,
yeah. Singapore.
On the right-hand side in the album, it says 1,113 frames in 3 minutes and 1 second.
Oh, yes. There you
so,
go.
That,
oh, yeah, yeah, I've just seen that, yeah.
Yeah.
Frame averaging mode, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, 3 minutes.
Hmm, very good. Yeah. Anyone else want to say anything about that before we finish?
I just wanted to mention a different image that I really like. The lady holding the umbrella on the zebra crossing. I love images with warm tones and cool tones in them, with the orange and the blue. And this looks like she's posing for you. It's brilliant. I love it.
It was absolutely pissing it down when I took this. It was so wet, I couldn't get my camera out, even though it's sort of weatherproof, whatever that means. It was absolute torrential rain, so all I had on me was a phone to use, really. And the streets were empty. That's how wet it was. And normally it's Tokyo, you can't move for people, so you can. That'll tell you how horrible the weather was. Yeah, and I think she was like out there trying to sell something to people walking past, the tourists, but I just kind of crouched down in front of her and took this snap. And to be honest, I didn't even see the person crossing the road behind her. That was just a lucky accident.
And that's brilliant. Probably,
yeah, it makes the image for me. I had no idea they were there until I got back. But yeah, I did up the blues and up the oranges on either side just to give you that contrast if you want to know. But yeah,
I figured you might have.
It was kind of in camera, but it was exaggerated for sure.
Very nice. Okay, then. Thanks very much, gents. And we'll be back in for another show, as long as there's enough people to build a quorum here, on the 21st of May, Thursday the 21st of May. If you are a photographer, whether it be with a phone or camera, and you want to come on the show, join in the band and talk about, particularly as we include cameras in phones now, then do give us a shout and do offer to come on. You'll be very welcome to join the happy band here. The website, don't forget now, is part of PSC, so you'll find all the stuff about this show on phoneshowchat.uk, and also in the feeds for PSC, the Phone Show Chat, in terms of RSS and in your podcatchers and all the rest of it. So do try not to get too confused. Give me a shout in the MeWe group if you are confused, and we'll try and point you in the right direction, and we'll apologise for that straight away now. But hopefully we'll be back in 2 weeks' time, and we'll see you there. Thanks for listening, and take care, everyone.